The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Hugh Bennett from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. Our cover story this week, Destination Aspirations. Before the cover, though, we'll read the biz section and the reporter pages. Biz is written by managing editor Dane Huffman. NC State to see huge changes in housing. Hillsborough Street will be impacted as hub on campus project rises. Student housing at NC State University is about to undergo a dramatic change, and Hillsborough Street will feel the impact. On the rise at the corner of Hillsborough Street and Cox Avenue is the massive hub on-campus apartment project that opens in 2026. The Burley development from Core Spaces of Chicago is a far cry from the Brownstone Hotel, which had 190 rooms and dated to 1966. The hub will have 2,195 beds, basically serving the same number of students as nearby Broughton High School. It's far bigger than a traditional residence hall such as Sullivan, which has 713. Its 12-story height with the rooftop pool easily rivals the bell tower, which rises 115 feet. The huge influx of students will be felt by the merchants in the area. I don't think any of the changes will be overnight except for traffic when it opens, said Jeff Murison, the CEO of Hillsborough Street Community Services Corp. The first week it will be very obvious that there are a whole lot more students walking around, but I think it will take many months and years to ripple its way through the economy. Also on the way is a major upgrade to campus living. NC State plans to demolish the Sullivan, Lee, and Bergall residence halls as part of the $800 million Cates West project. That effort will put in 3,000 beds and pump fresh energy into the core of campus. While some famed Hillsborough Street places are gone, such as the Bowling Alley, Edwards Grocery, and Sadlack's Heroes, Murison noted that the business corridor is actually very, very stable. Not a lot of turnover in that middle zone. And now hundreds of potential new customers are coming. They will be looking for places to spend money, whether that is existing places like the Players Retreat or Sam and Bill's or new places to come. It will have an impact, Murison said. RDU gains flight to New Hampshire. A low-cost airline is adding a new nonstop flight at Raleigh-Durham International Airport, although you'll have to wait until winter to hop aboard. Breeze Airways will begin flights to Portsmouth, New Hampshire in December. Breeze now has 29 nonstop flights listed at the airport. Of course, given the heat and the triangle, a flight to New Hampshire sounds pretty appealing. Right now, Avelo offers a direct flight from RDU to Manchester, located in the center of the state. Breeze will also begin flights to Manchester in November. In soccer, State put some dollars behind All-Star Game. The National Hockey League's All-Star Game was a big hit in Raleigh in 2011, and now Charlotte gets another chance at All-Star festivities when Major League Soccer holds its All-Star Game in the city in 2026. MLS Commissioner Don Garber announced the event on July 16th, and it turns out North Carolina's bid was backed by a $2 million grant from the state government, the Charlotte Business Journal reported. North Carolina Commerce Secretary Lee Lilly disclosed the grant coming from the state's Major Events, Games, and Attractions Fund. That dates to 2023 and the legalization in the state of sports betting, which began in 2024. Tepper Sports and Entertainment, owner of the stadium, MLS team Charlotte FC, and the Carolina Panthers, pursued the All-Star Game with assistance from civic leaders and groups, including the Charlotte Sports Foundation. Charlotte also hosted the NBA All-Star Game in 1991 and 2019. Sanford Airport to add more capacity. An airport that hosts corporate jets and top-level executive meetings is growing. Raleigh Executive Jetport in Sanford recently opened a new bypass taxiway parallel to the runway. The expansion allows the jetport to handle more air traffic, giving pilots quicker and more efficient access to the runway for takeoffs and landings, said Bob Hutz, airport director. The $3.9 million project is part of ongoing growth. Raleigh Executive houses 240 aircraft now, and Hutz said the addition of new hangars could accommodate another 50 planes by the end of 2025. Nightdale continues to be on a roll. Another residential community has been proposed for growing Nightdale. Developer Mike Jordan, through his Site Investments LLC, has filed a rezoning application for 60 acres near the intersection of Buffalo and Horton Roads north of Nightdale's core. The rezoning comes with a master plan for a 245-unit called Terra Vita. Jordan is seeking a development with 144 single-family homes and 101 townhomes. Reporter Lauren Onosorge brings us the transportation and finance section. Durham is next to consider BRT, Bus Rapid Transit. Think of it as a rail-like service that runs on rubber tires. Could be coming to Durham next. The city is moving forward with plans for BRT, a high-capacity bus system with dedicated lanes meant to make transit more competitive with driving in terms of speed, convenience, and reliability. But in a city where light rail fizzled after years of planning, can BRT bypass the bureaucracy and become reality? Mayor Leonardo Williams acknowledged that Durham is playing catch-up. He calls the plans, which start with a feasibility study, an opportunity for us to catch up to Raleigh and Chapel Hill. While we're an innovative city on the forefront and leading in so many areas, this is one area where we're behind. We are behind when it comes to bus rapid transit, he said. Durham's plan runs from Duke University's East Campus to the Village Shopping Center. It's still early in the process, with the city currently scoping out the route and conducting a feasibility study. Durham has been a part of bold transportation plans before. The Durham Orange Light Rail project failed to move beyond the planning phase despite millions invested. Williams said that won't happen again. The reality is we can never fund all of these things by ourselves, and that's why I'm such a believer in regionalism, he said. Since we lost light rail, my goal is to make sure we never make that mistake again. Williams sees economic development potential beyond augmenting what Go Durham is already doing. Today, about 75% of Go Durham riders live in households without vehicles. But Williams said reliable transit has potential to attract residents with vehicles, too. New hospital raises stakes for a key leg of 540 project. Plans for the state's first freestanding children's hospital raise the stakes for an already high-pressure transportation project in the Triangle, Complete 540. J.J. Eden, executive director at the North Carolina Turnpike Authority, said his team had no special heads-up that the children's hospital, a joint effort between UNC Chapel Hill and Duke University, had selected Veridia in Apex. But the final phase of 540 was already being designed with congestion in mind. The in-progress phase 2 of Complete 540 will close the 540 loop, eventually extending the roadway from I-40 to I-87 in Nightdale. Alan Shapiro, deputy chief engineer at the Turnpike Authority, said his team has been contacted by a handful of potential developers interested in and near 540. At the developer's expense, crews may be able to install pipes beneath the roadway to support future projects. No such considerations were asked of NCTA prior to the hospital announcement. Eden said the proximity of the future hospital makes the project even more satisfying. It's a complex project, cutting a road through wooded acreage, but so far Eden said no unexpected challenges have emerged. Eden said construction will likely be in full swing by this time next year. Durham software firm confirms plan for IPO. A high-growth Durham software company has filed to go public, but that doesn't mean the IPO window is open yet. Avalara, a tax software company, confirmed the filing of a confidential draft registration statement with the Securities and Exchange Commission. The price range was not released, nor was the number of shares being offered. The proposed public offering remains subject to the completion of the SEC review process, as well as market and other conditions, it stated. Jay Ritter, an IPO expert and professor at the University of Florida, said there's been a pickup of activity in recent months. But we're not seeing a flood of IPOs. We're seeing a steady increase, he said. First Citizens optimistic on SVB's future. More than 2 years after Raleigh's First Citizens Bank completed its acquisition of Silicon Valley Bank, it continues to beat earnings estimates in spite of some turmoil in the business it acquired. First Citizens loans and leases exceeded $141 billion in the quarter, a decrease of $89 million from last quarter. Executives told analysts loan growth in its general bank and commercial banking segments was offset by a decline in loans in the SVB commercial operation. SVB loans declined nearly $290 million, a dip that Mark Cadieu, president of SVB, said was most related to tech and healthcare banking. Chris Marinac, director of research at Janney Montgomery Scott, said in an interview of SVB, "This is a business that they got for free because the bank failed. In exchange for that, they have this business that has enormous potential at the right time, and I think the right time is not here yet." Let's turn now to the real estate and development section, written by Kaylee Thompson. Raleigh Tower lands financing. Glenwood South is about to get Raleigh's tallest residential tower as the developer has acquired financing for the building. Turnbridge Equities will start vertical construction on the $200 million Highline Glenwood, the 37-story residential tower to rise at the Creamery in Glenwood South immediately after demolition completes. Demolition will finish at the end of August. The building will deliver in mid-2028. The developer announced in a press release that it received approximately $147 million in construction financing from Axos Bank and managed accounts of the Manulife Investment Management Real Estate Credit Strategies team. Turnbridge is providing equity for the rest of the development cost for the project. Turnbridge Managing Director Jason Davis said the building is now fully funded. It's been a long time coming, as the developer had the site rezoned in 2020 and aimed to start construction in 2022. Since then, the plans have grown from a 32-story tower with 261 apartments to a 37-story tower with 306 units. It's obviously been a very challenging time for developers with limited access to capital, particularly for ground-up development of scale. So we're really excited after a number of years to find some great financing partners and get Highline Glenwood out of the ground, Davis said. It's great for Raleigh, it's great for downtown, and more broadly, I don't think there's a lot of downtown projects that have kicked off this next cycle of development yet, because the challenges really do persist between inflation, between limited amounts of capital, and that was willing to get developed. The Eastern at North Hills is 36 stories. PNC Plaza rises 33 stories in downtown Raleigh. This will be the first major commercial real estate development to break ground since 2022, as the CRE market has faced multiple headwinds. Cary developer plans luxury homes near RTP. Homes aimed at transplants from California are proposed for the Cary-Chatham border. Garang Greg Gala of Legacy Carolina Development has filed an annexation and rezoning application with the town of Cary for property east of the Old Chatham Golf Club. The plan is to build 25 single-family homes with listing prices likely ranging from $950,000 to $1.5 million. Gala said the company is targeting buyers from California working in tech, biotechnology, or pharma. "I live in Cary and believe in Cary. I believe the jobs are in RTP, not in Raleigh, and we want to develop as close to RTP as humanly possible. As the population grows and traffic increases, the closer you can live to work, the more value there is," Gala said. "We're bearish on downtown Raleigh and bullish on RTP. The location is also close to the future Apple campus, so long as the tech giant pushes the start button after its summer of 2024 pause announcement." In the Lake Johnson area, former owner of Sammy's plans new townhomes. The namesake of Sammy's Tap and Grill is building a new townhome project near Lake Johnson. Sammy Stevens, owner of Centennial Land Company, is about to start construction on 19 townhomes on Avent Ferry Road across from the Avent Ferry Shopping Center. The townhomes will likely be a mix of rentals and for sale units. Listing prices will start in the mid-$400,000s. Stevens said he's been acquiring the four parcels for the project over the past 5 years. Altogether, the parcels total 2.02 acres and have a combined assessed value of $1.39 million. There are four single-family homes on site that will be demolished by fall 2025. Construction is expected to take a year. Morrisville saves by buying, not building. The town of Morrisville bought an industrial building with plans to relocate its public works department. The town acquired a 50,400-square-foot industrial building for $10 million, according to Wake County deed records. Assistant town manager Giselle Rodriguez said the town made the purchase after realizing building its own new public works building would be too expensive with increasing construction costs. Knowing it would be in need of a new facility, the town has spent years planning a new facility it would build, but cost rose to $36 million. We had the challenge in front of us that the cost of the facilities had increased too much. We still had an obligation to be able to provide the needs of the department so that they can continue to serve the community. That challenge created an opportunity for innovation amongst our staff to think outside of the box and said, "Hey, wait a second, why don't we look for a different location?" Rodriguez said. The town will spend about $12 million improving the aging building along with upfitting the space to meet the needs of the Public Works Department. That includes adding more offices and retrofitting to create a space with lifts so employees can perform maintenance and work on fleet vehicles, among other items. Ben Tobin is the writer who brings us the Greater Triangle section. Trends in home sales varied in June. Johnston and Chatham see sales slow, but Lee County sees rise in closings. Nationwide high home prices and stubbornly high interest rates have resulted in relatively lower home sales totals in the month of June compared to earlier in the year. In the Triangle, these trends vary greatly by county. Johnston County, for example, saw 362 sales closed, according to data from Dorify MLS, formerly Triangle MLS. While that total represents around 18% of home sales the county saw year to date through the end of June, it also shows a more than 8% drop-off from June of 2024. Johnston County's median sales price for homes in June, $354,945, is far below that of Wake County, which is just shy of $500,000. April Stevens, a broker and owner of the April Stevens Team Real Estate Group and a Johnston County commissioner, said, "Many move-up owners sitting on 3% mortgages chose to stay put, trimming the buyer pool." Meanwhile, Chatham County's median sales price hovering around $670,000 for the year and $675,000 for June has spelled trouble for home sales. In June, Chatham County saw 102 home sales, down 2.9% year over year. The county's 538 home sales year to date through the end of June is a steep drop off of 6.8% from the same time frame in 2024. Eric Andrews, the owner of Realty World Carolina Properties in Pittsburgh, said that currently Chatham County risks becoming a market where only the wealthy can buy. Affordability has not been nearly as much of an issue in Lee County. According to data from the Longleaf MLS, 114 homes were sold in Lee County in June, representing a roughly 23% increase from the year prior. Meanwhile, the median sales price in June was a little more than $309,000. "There's a lot of new construction sales in the last 6 to 12 months in Lee County," said John Ramsberger, owner of Sanford Real Estate. In Harnett County, Lillington is targeted for more new homes. A regional home builder that has been active in the Triangle is plotting a new neighborhood with dozens of homes in a hopping town south of Raleigh. Mungo Homes, based out of Irmo, South Carolina, is building one of its newest neighborhoods, Leander Lee Preserve, in Lillington in Harnett County. The neighborhood will have 72 single-family homes at full build-out and sits off NC-27 West near Duncan Creek. Annie Kane, a spokesperson for Mungo, said sales for the neighborhood opened in mid-July and homes are under construction. Floor plans for the neighborhood start at around 2,200 square feet and go up to around 3,000 square feet, with homes starting in the mid-300,000s, according to the neighborhood's website. Lillington, with a population of under 5,000, is 50 miles south of Raleigh and has seen rising interest from homebuyers as the Triangle has grown and the price of land, especially in Wake County, has risen. In Pitt County, Greenville Hotel sells for double its 2012 price. A hotel in booming Greenville has sold for more than double its 2012 price, a result of the growth of the city and region. Bhavanama, a Kenley LLC that lists Sanjay Patel as a member, purchased the Red Roof Inn at 301 Southeast Greenville Boulevard for a little under $3.3 million recently, according to Pitt County deed records. The seller of the hotel, Greenville's A1 Hospitality LLC, purchased the property in May 2012 for $1.4 million. The hotel is composed of 63 rooms, and it was built in the 1980s, according to property records. Greenville's population is growing. The U.S. Census Bureau estimates that the city's population is roughly 95,000, which is up from the roughly 89,000 residents that the city had in 2020. And in Johnston County, a Texas builder is developing townhomes in Clayton. A Texas home builder is working to bring what is a rarer housing stock, townhomes, for fast-growing Johnston County. LGI Homes is constructing and selling homes for Medley Park, a townhome community off Seville Way and Camel Street near downtown Clayton. In recent months, the home builder has spent around $6.3 million to acquire all 62 lots for the neighborhood, according to Johnston County deed records. Homes will start from the upper $200,000, according to LGI Homes' website. Townhome projects in Johnston County aren't nearly as commonplace as they are in counties with more urban and thus suburban hubs, such as Wake and Durham. While data on the exact number of townhomes in the county isn't publicly available, Redfin listed 141 homes for sale in Johnston County. Meanwhile, in Wake County, that number jumps to around 1,400, around 10 times more. For context, Wake County's estimated population is less than 5 times that of Johnston. Density concerns typically loom larger in places like Johnston County, where residents hope to maintain the rural character of the area and to avoid the traffic surrounding cities like Raleigh. Therefore, townhome projects sometimes face stiff opposition. Now we turn to the healthcare and life sciences section, brought to us by Zach Ezone. Novo Nordisk cuts projections. Novo Nordisk, a global pharmaceutical company planning to invest billions to expand its North Carolina operations, has cut its sales projections for the year and installed a new CEO. Novo Nordisk, on July 29th, lowered its financial expectations for 2025 in response to slower growth for its obesity and diabetes products, Wegovy and Ozempic. Shares for the company were down more than 20% after the announcement, and the stock has fallen 38% for the year. The lower projections come about a year after the Danish company announced plans to expand operations in Johnston County. Novo Nordisk said it would invest $4.1 billion in a new facility in Clayton that would bring 1.4 million square feet of production space online, doubling the combined square footage of the company's existing three facilities in Clayton and Durham. The expansion is designed to boost the company's manufacturing capacity for products like Wegovy and Ozempic. The investment is expected to create 1,000 jobs, adding to the company's existing workforce of about 2,500 people in the region. The company has previously said it expects the new site to come online in phases between 2027 and 2029. Novo Nordisk's operations and expansion plans in Clayton and Durham remain on track, a company spokesperson said. The company, which did $41 billion in sales in 2024, is expecting sales growth this year of 8 to 14% and operating revenue to grow 10 to 16%. The company has become heavily dependent on the surging popularity of its weight loss drugs in the U.S. Novo Nordisk said the lower sales outlook for Wegovy reflects the persistent use of compounded GLP-1s, slower than expected market expansion, and competition. GLP-1 is a class of medicine that includes Wegovy and Ozempic. Novo Nordisk also named Maziar Mike Deltsdar as its next CEO. Duke is now the target of a federal investigation. The Trump administration informed Duke University July 28 that its medical school and law journal are being investigated. The Trump administration says it is aware of allegations, that's a quote, that Duke's medical school and other parts of its health system, quote, are engaged in practices that, if true, would violate the Title VI of the Civil Rights Act, unquote, and a section of the Affordable Care Act. The allegations would make Duke Health unfit for any further financial relationship with the federal government, according to a letter sent to the university. The university and its health system collectively employ more than 40,000 people. The administration alleges Duke Health has engaged in discriminatory activity in recruitment, admissions, hiring, promotion, and more. The letter did not provide details. The administration requested that Duke Health create a committee to review policies related to the illegal use of race preferences. Separately, the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights has launched an investigation into the university and Duke Law Journal. The announcement references a report that claims the Law Journal allegedly discriminates on the basis of race, color, and/or national origin when selecting Law Journal members. Layoffs still loom at Duke despite large buyouts. Nearly 600 Duke University employees have agreed to voluntary buyouts as it cuts costs amid federal funding losses, but a further reduction in force is coming in August. Duke leaders said July 25th that 599 staff accepted the offer through a voluntary separation incentive program. In addition, another 250-plus faculty members are considering voluntary retirement incentive offers, according to the email to the school. But more cuts are on the way, as university leaders said. Even with these cost reduction measures in place and a high rate of voluntary separation incentive program acceptance, we will unfortunately need to further reduce the university workforce. Durham Tech president signs on for more years. J.B. Buxton's run as the president of Durham Technical Community College will continue for another 4 years. Durham Tech's board and the State Board of Community Colleges recently approved an extension that will see Buxton remain in the role through June 30th of 2029. His previous contract was set to expire in June. The move keeps Buxton in charge of one of the fastest-growing community colleges in the state. Buxton, president since 2020, views this as a major opportunity for Durham Tech. I think this is probably the best region in the country to do community college work, Buxton said. We've got great universities. We've got an incredible job market in the Triangle in which students can move into good careers and good jobs. Durham Tech plays a key role in developing the workforce, Buxton said. This includes projects such as Genentech in Holly Springs or Biogen in its Research Triangle Park campus. Reporter Kate Tracy brings us the retail and restaurant section. Sprouts picks Durham project. Sprouts Farmers Market is among a handful of retailers to sign on at the $200 million West Side Bottling Project in North Durham, the site of the former Durham Coca-Cola bottling warehouse. The developer, the Ardent Company of Atlanta, has also landed Shake Shack, Ulta Beauty, Club Pilates, First Watch, and Vernus Nail Salon, and a handful of other retailers at its $200 million West Side Bottling Project as it prepares to break ground this month. Jay Douglas, executive director of Ardent, said the firm initially reached out to Sprouts in August of 2022. We really thought it was a great fit, and they happened to agree with us due to the way in which it aggregates all of the North Durham area and markets, Douglas said. It really fit perfectly for what they were looking for as they continue their expansion. Right now, the Phoenix Grocer plans to open during fourth quarter of 2026. It continues an expansion in the Triangle for Sprouts. Sprouts confirmed earlier this month its plans to build a second Raleigh location in Northwest Raleigh. Right now, the project's 70,000 square feet of retail space is 70% pre-leased. Except for the site's existing bank, all of the retail space will be new buildings. Douglas said his team has been selective in its outreach to retailers in order to create a tone and tenor for the project. The developer closed on the Durham Coca-Cola Bottling Company warehouse and land, spending $15.5 million for it, according to Durham County deed records. It also acquired the land the First Citizens Bank is on, paying $1.5 million. Douglas said Ardent was unable to salvage or find uses for any of the architecture, structure, or equipment from the bottling warehouse. Children's Bookstore finds new home. After closing its downtown Raleigh store in 2023, a black-owned children's bookstore has found a new home. Victoria Scott Miller and Dwayne Miller have signed a lease and plan to open their bookstore, Liberation Station, next Juneteenth at 2718 Rock Quarry Road. The bookstore will occupy 1,000 square feet at Montague Plaza, a 15,000 square foot building dedicated to black-owned businesses, Scott Miller said. She liked the location for its proximity to families and the community her business serves. Liberation Station has been open as a pop-up since 2019 and still has permanent libraries at different locations around the Triangle. The business closed its location in 2023 in downtown Raleigh after receiving death threats and hate mail, Scott Miller said. She wanted to find a location with safety as a priority. The top selling point was the fact that it was right next door to the Southeast Raleigh Police Station, she said. Asheville restaurant to join Ironworks. Acclaimed Asheville chef Meherwan Irani is bringing the spice to Raleigh Ironworks. Irani, a James Beard Award winner, plans to open Batawala by Chai Pani next spring at the development along Atlantic Avenue. Guests at Batawala can expect a wide-ranging menu that celebrates late-night Indian street food. The menu includes chicken tikka, lamb paneer, and steak kebabs served with naan or in a salad or rice bowl with herbs and chutneys. The Triangle area has long been at the top of our list of cities to open in, Irani said in a statement. It has a special connection with Asheville as well as a passionate and diverse culinary scene, food-obsessed locals, and a vibrant Desi community. Roots Natural Restaurant to open near NC State. A Virginia-based eatery that caters to college students has picked its first Raleigh location near NC State University. Roots Natural Kitchen, a fast casual restaurant serving salads and grain bowls, will open at 2712 Hillsborough Street in the former Gumby's Pizza Space in the next spring semester. Henry Borgeson, CEO of Roots, was attracted to Hillsborough Street for its proximity to NC State's campus, where the restaurant can serve students as well as the needs of the athletics department. Plus, Borgeson thought the location would be a strategic launching point for growing elsewhere in the Triangle. Hillsborough Street is what I consider the classic university strip, where you've got a lot of food options, you've got a lot of bars, but it doesn't necessarily have the healthy options that I think kids crave, he said. The restaurant space is 2,700 square feet. Borgeson, a 2014 University of Virginia graduate, said the first Roots location opened in 2015 near the UVA campus in Charlottesville. Roots has continued to target university students. It opened in Chapel Hill on Franklin Street at the end of 2021. At the end of this year, Roots will have 17 restaurants. It currently operates in North Carolina, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Delaware. The final reporter page is Hospitality and Development, brought to us by Lauren Rhodes. Developer unloads part of warehouse property. As downtown development continues to scale back, the New York company behind the $49 million renovation of Raleigh's Holiday Inn has sold a property for $2.33 million in the warehouse district. Harrington Street Owner LLC, owned by Tidal Real Estate Partners, recently sold a building at the corner of South Harrington Street and West Davy Street to Wegner Vincent LLC of Raleigh. Located at 324 South Harrington Street, the building dates back to 1925 and has an assessed value of $2.2 million. It's a two-story brick office building spanning 11,040 square feet. According to Showcase Pictures Online, the property appears to be primed for office use. Tidal has purchased the 0.15-acre site as part of a whopping $20.9 million acquisition in 2022. City documents show the CBRE Raleigh's Land Services Group sold the five adjoining parcels to Tidal after the area was rezoned in 2020 for mixed-use development up to 40 stories. In February 2022, a zoning letter was requested to verify the parcel zoning from the city. That request came with a description of 338 luxury apartments. "We've had our sights set on the warehouse district for some time," Mick Walsdorf, CEO of Tidal Real Estate Partners, told Triangle Business Journal at the time of the sale. Tidal Real Estate did not respond to multiple requests for comment about the sale. Attorneys representing both Tidal and the buyer said their clients declined to comment. The other parcels involved in the 2022 deal are not currently listed for sale. Their addresses are 310 South Harrington Street, 319 Southwest Street, 406 West Davy Street, and 333 Southwest Street. Tidal Real Estate purchased downtown Raleigh's iconic Holiday Inn on Hillsborough Street in November of 2021. After initially planning to demolish the building for a 20-story boutique hotel and residential tower, the company later scaled back the project. Now, nearly $50 million will be invested in converting the inn into a Hotel Indigo, a brand under IHG Hotels and Resorts. WUNC and others weigh impact of federal funding cuts. One Friday morning, Paul Hunton woke up in Durham, rolled over, and checked the notifications on his phone. Hunton, the president of WUNC, had stayed up late the night before watching congressional hearings. In the morning, he learned the federal $9 billion rescission package had passed overnight. The bill rolled back $1.1 billion for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. WUNC lost $800,000, about 5% of its budget. Across the state, other public broadcasters woke up to new financial realities following the rescission. PBS North Carolina announced it would face a $4 million annual cut, which CEO David Crabtree called an alarming step in a statement. The move left media leaders looking for new ways to plug the gaps. as far as the overall business model goes, now that public media organizations are going to have to do, and the conversations we're going to have in the next days and weeks to come are, how do we make a more collective and collaborative public radio system across the country, but also across the state of North Carolina, Hunton said. And finally, Chapel Hill's Mama Dips closes after a long run. Mama Dips Kitchen in Chapel Hill has closed its doors for good. The restaurant, owned and operated by the family of the late Mildred Mama Dip Council, shared in a Facebook post July 22nd that it is now permanently closed. The post expressed gratitude to customers for nearly 5 decades of support, in which it became a key part of life in Chapel Hill. Since 1976, we've had the joy of feeding Chapel Hill with love, soul, and Mama Dip's dump cooking goodness, the post said. From family dinners to first tastes, we're honored to have been a part of your stories. Council opened the restaurant at 408 West Rosemary Street, which is $64 in hand, according to an Instagram post. By the time Council died in 2018, her restaurant had become known for its country kitchen cooking style. The 4,226-square-foot property was listed for sale at $3.6 million in 2023, though the family stated the restaurant would remain open until the property was sold. According to the Orange County Geographical Information System, the property is still owned by Mama Dip's Family Properties, LLC. And now we turn to our cover story this week, Destination Triangle. Major Triangle mixed-use projects aim to go beyond just live, work, play. And the cover story written this week by Kaylee Thompson. Picture this. It's 2035 and a couple walks from their high-rise luxury apartment to the Lenovo Center for a Carolina Hurricanes game. Their plan is to hang out at the new tailgating promenade area with friends and after the game catch a drink at a nearby bar. Before the game, they've eaten dinner at home with groceries from the market downstairs and let their dog romp around the dog park. And it's all done within a small radius that used to be hundreds of parking spaces. But by 2035, it's a destination area surrounding the arena as Gale Force Sports and Entertainment transforms the 80 acres surrounding the Lenovo Center and Carter Finley Stadium into a destination center that rivals the likes of Atlanta Braves' Truist Park and the Battery surrounding it. It's just one of several destination centers popping up around the Triangle as the market evolves. Like the area around the Lenovo Center, emerging spaces such as Fenton and Cary, Dix Park, the Horseshoe at Hub RTP, and Viridia and Apex are bringing fresh thinking to the Triangle and offering places for people to dwell, not just visit. Brian Fork, the CEO of the Hurricanes, calls the destination centers critically important for the Triangle's future. The reason is because the Triangle is one of the fastest growing places in the United States, he said, and if we have one or two destination centers, people like destination centers, that's why we're building them, and why we believe they attract customers. Then we need more of them so that the handful that we do have already don't get overrun. We believe that's a good thing overall for Raleigh to have 3 or 4 or 5 destination centers to give people variety, give them different options. Certain days they may come visit our place, and certain days they may go to other destination centers, but it manages crowding, gives people more variety, and gives people more options. Destination centers provide convenience and go beyond a trophy tower or traditional mixed use. With destination centers, you diversify your risk as an investor because you don't just have a huge office tower with maybe a little retail on the bottom, said Justin Trowbridge, partner at Charlotte-based White Point Partners, which is behind the Horseshoe at the Hub in Research Triangle Park. Now you have maybe smaller office, more retail, a little more land, and you're able to create a true mixed-use destination that is more convenient than someone riding up and down an elevator 40 stories, he said. Destination centers tend to include a feature or anchor that becomes a drawing factor, such as a sports arena, entertainment venue, hospital, or activated outdoor space. The 1,100-acre Viridia development will become a big draw, especially after UNC Health and Duke Health announced the North Carolina Children's Hospital would take 230 acres there. The hospital takes the project from a regional attraction to a statewide destination. Viridia plans to have thousands of single-family homes, townhomes, and apartments, along with a new Wake Tech campus, Wake County Public Schools, hotels, industrial space, and retail space. Kate Pierce, executive director of Dix Park for the city of Raleigh, noted that one of the beautiful things about the Triangle is that different communities have their own character. Apex, for example, is different from Cary, which is different from Raleigh. Having a variety of experiences in a variety of locations adds to the robustness of the region, Pierce said. There's a sense of regionalism here that exists, and the destination centers are like the points of our stars and our constellations that keep us all connected. Across the triangle, various locations plan to grow, which attracts more growth. Duke Health's planned expansion of its 85-acre Duke Health Cary location drew two surrounding developments. As the Hall Companies and Bel Canto Asset Growth Fund each have planned mixed-use developments. Between the two, there will be thousands of apartments, a hotel, up to 40,000 square feet of retail, up to 350,000 square feet of office, and 35,000 square feet of community gathering space. Developers who create destination centers focus on what they call dwell time, and it goes beyond the typical dinner and drinks or shopping and lunch. It's a come and stay all day or live here and spend your free time exploring all it has to offer. The goal is to keep people interested and entertained. By keeping a customer on site, you increase the chance that you continue to earn their business, and especially in retail, you have to earn your customer's business every single day, so you have to provide a reason for them to continue to come back, said Paul Zarian, managing director at Hines, the Houston firm that developed Fenton and Cary and plans to transform Waverly Place in Cary. And oftentimes that manifests itself in the programming that occurs on site. So it's events, activations, and it goes beyond the buildings and the architecture. It's the public spaces. It's the programming. We call it the software side of the business because at the end of the day, consumers have a lot of choices and they'll go somewhere else where they get the best experience. So it's up to us to provide that to them. Because of the density, another challenge developers face when planning and executing destination centers is traffic. It's the biggest hurdle for the developers behind the Lenovo Center, as traffic is already a problem. I need people to be able to come to work, go out to eat, go to the gym, go to their apartment where they sleep on the same day that 20,000 people are coming to a hockey game, a basketball game, a concert, and be able to come and go freely, Fork said. So managing the traffic flow for events and 365-day-a-year district users is the biggest challenge that we face and the most important thing to solve. These changes come at a time when the Triangle's downtowns struggling to make a full comeback, especially when it comes to people back in offices after the pandemic. What you're going to see is a densification of the Triangle, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, Trowbridge said. Right now, the Triangle is pretty spread out. You have a pretty big gap between Durham and Raleigh, and same with Raleigh to Chapel Hill. The RTP project is right in the middle of all three of those. You're going to start to see the density be built out, and all the cities over time are going to feel more like one larger market rather than three separate markets. Here are four key projects that are changing the landscape of the Triangle. The first project is Dorothea Dix Park in Raleigh. Turning the 308 acres of green space and dated buildings on the edge of downtown Raleigh into a destination urban park like that of Presidio of San Francisco is no small feat, but it's one the City of Raleigh and Dix Park Conservancy are partnering to undertake. The Gibson Play Plaza, the first big step in that transformation, opened in June to the tune of 198,000 visitors for the month, according to the city's Pierce. The sheer number of visitors in its first month proves what the city and conservancy set out to do, make the park a destination spot. The success of the Play Plaza speeds up the timeline for the developing the remaining buildings and empty spaces. All of the amenities and facilities, food and beverage concessions, restrooms, what does the future of the buildings hold? It proves that people are coming to this space and they're going to need the services and facilities to support extending their stay and having a full day at the park, Pierce said. The 10-year master plan dictates that the next steps involve making decisions about which buildings should be redeveloped and which should be demolished. The decisions have to be made quickly, as the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services will be vacating its Dix Park offices by the end of 2025 and moving into its new office on Blue Ridge Road. Pierce sees it as creating several destinations within the park since it's so vast. Gibson Play Plaza is the first of those, but the challenge for the city and conservancy is to incrementally develop the park continuously, adding attractions that will allow people to stay longer. Developments are rising in the spaces just outside the park. The Rockway by Kane Realty Corp is already open with 335 apartments and ground floor retail that is filling up. Later this year, SLI Capital will open the first phase of The Weld that includes two 20-story towers with 675 apartments and ground floor retail. Both these developers said the plans for the park were the catalyst for developing projects on the edge of the park, knowing it would draw more development businesses and a connection to downtown. The second project is Fenton in Cary. Fenton is one of the first destination centers in the Triangle that was built outside of Raleigh or Durham, betting on the increasing draw of Cary. Hines has completed the first phase, offering visitors and residents several retail, dining, and entertainment options. The next step, getting phase two out of the planning and pre-leasing stages and into reality. Phase two includes hundreds more apartments, office, and retail space, along with a hotel and grocery store. Wegmans was slated to be the anchor grocer tenant, but backed out in early 2021 and is still on the hook for the lease it signed. No new grocer has been announced. Mainsail Lodging and Development is planning a 186-key hotel that will cost $70 million and rise seven stories. It's Mainsail's first hotel in the state and selected Fenton because it was a destination. Increasingly, we're finding that our customers are attracted to those types of live, work, play environments, and that spans the product type spectrum, Zarian said. Office customers want to be where they can take the elevator downstairs and have lunch or meet for happy hour or dinner. Hotel guests want to stay in the same environment. Residential is attracted to the retail and to the employment, oftentimes across the street. And, of course, the restaurateurs and the retailers do thrive on that environment. The reality with retail is that retail does need to draw from a larger trade area, so the retail itself often can't solely survive on-site, residential, and office. But from a branding standpoint, oftentimes it's those destination center-type projects that creates the environment that they want to be associated with. That environment has brought in big regional names such as Scott Crawford with his Crawford Brothers Steakhouse that opened at the end of 2024, and Patrick Woodson's Brewery Bavana, a downtown Raleigh favorite, opened its second location in Fenton in April. National chains have been drawn to the Cary destination, like Sweet Paris Crepery and Cafe, which will open its first North Carolina location in the spring. And the final project is the Lenovo Center in Raleigh. The idea for the transformation both inside and out of the Lenovo Center in West Raleigh came after the Hurricane signed a 20-year deal to remain at the arena and a more than $1 billion development deal for the property surrounding it in August of 2023. Construction will start on the Sports and Entertainment District in the first quarter of 2026 as the developer is going through the final stages of the site review process for Phase 1 with the city, according to Fork. A set of parking decks will be first built. The rezoning was approved by Raleigh City Council in April, and a development agreement with the Centennial Authority was made prior to that. What makes our destination center unique from other destination centers in the Triangle is the fact that it's anchored by a 20,000-seat NHL hockey, ACC basketball venue, and across the street from a 55,000-seat football stadium, and that presents great challenges and opportunities for us, Fork said. Phase 1 will include more than 200,000 square feet of entertainment and lifestyle retail space, 150,000 square feet of office, 150-room hotel, more than 500 apartments, and two parking decks, the new tailgating space, and a potentially a 4,300-seat music venue. There will be four phases total, all of which are in subsequent stages of design and development. When it comes to the $300 million upgrades for inside the Novo Center, the initial focus will be on the arena level, main concourse, and upper concourse. The inside of the arena will see a new open-view bar on the 300 level, along with more grab-and-go options, luxury box suites at the ice level, and an upgraded tailgating experience with luxury suites, balconies, a promenade, and stage for live entertainment. The tailgating space is expected to be open in time for the 2027 football season. We've got an editorial this week from frequent contributor John Hood, "Tariff Threats Hurt North Carolina Workers." Daimler Truck North America operates some of North Carolina's largest manufacturing facilities, including a Freightliner truck plant in Mount Holly, a Freightliner and Western Star plant in Cleveland, a components and logistics center in Gastonia, and a Thomas-built buses plant in High Point. It employs some 6,800 North Carolinians in the Charlotte area alone. Make that employed past tense. In mid-July, Daimler's footprint shrank by about 600 jobs in our state and 2,000 across all its North American locations. Company executives hope the layoffs will only be temporary. They are, however, in no position to make it a promise. Why is Daimler shredding employees in North Carolina and elsewhere? Because sales are trending down by about 9%, according to the company's current estimate for 2025. This story isn't about retail consumers. Daimler mostly sells its trucks and buses to other enterprises, private or public. Right now, many such buyers are hanging on to cash rather than replenishing their vehicle fleets. It's yet another example of how the Trump administration's mercurial approach to trade policy is making it difficult for businesses to plan for the future. People are just looking for certainty, whether it's tariffs or any other economic policy, Daimler Truck North America CEO John O'Leary told Bloomberg Television. Our customers are kind of in wait-and-see mode because their end customers, who generate freight moves and ultimately freight rates, are also in wait-and-see mode. So everybody is just kind of on the sidelines waiting for some sign of certainty and not buying trucks. Hiking taxes on imports or threatening to do so to compel concessions from foreign governments is advertised as a way to create manufacturing jobs within the U.S. This is false advertising, however. Taxes on foreign imports won't do the job because foreign competition doesn't explain much of the decline in manufacturing employment over the past three decades. Indeed, North Carolina manufacturers produce more output today, $108 billion as of 2023, than in 1997, and inflation-adjusted $71 billion. What really happened is that thanks to technology gains and capital investment, manufacturing is a lot more productive. Daimler employs thousands of people here in North Carolina because its continent-spanning operations allow it to make and sell vehicles more efficiently than if confined to a single region or country. In total, North Carolina's vehicle manufacturers and related enterprises produced about $8 billion worth of goods in 2023. While that sum vastly exceeds the output of either furniture and wood products, $2.4 billion, or textiles and apparel, $2.6 billion, far too few North Carolinians appear to be aware of the role the vehicle sector plays in our economy. While some domestic manufacturers clearly benefit from protectionism, most don't. Tariffs threaten to disrupt the customer base and supply chains that sustain thousands of jobs here in our own state. Not only will tariffs not bring back the huge apparel and furniture plants that once employed many blue-collar workers, including my own ancestors, but they are costing North Carolinian jobs right now. For their sake, it's time to bring this madness to a swift end. John Hood is a John Locke Foundation board member in Raleigh, and he can be reached at jhood@johnlocke, and that's John, LOCKE.org. Bond records detail fiscal challenges at Meredith College in Raleigh. Meredith College's restructuring efforts come as the school tries to regain compliance with financial requirements tied to its debt. The college has confirmed cuts to about 6% of its employees as it tries to balance its 2025-26 budget. These cuts come months after S&P Global Ratings lowered the agency's rating on Meredith's revenue bonds and assigned the school a negative outlook. The bond rating was downgraded from BBB plus to BBB. S&P Global Ratings made the change in February following enrollment declines at Meredith and the school not being in compliance with certain debt covenants at the end of its previous fiscal year. The lowered rating reflects our view of the college's continued enrollment declines through fall of 2024, which have pressured operations, resulting in debt service coverage falling significantly below covenant levels in fiscal 2024. That's S&P Global Ratings credit analyst Vicky Stavropoulos in February. The North Carolina Capital Facilities Finance Agency issued revenue bonds for Meredith in 2016 and 2018 for totals of about $8.13 million and $40.96 million. As of June 30, 2024, the principal outstanding amount of those bonds were $7.05 million and $29.1 million, respectively, according to the agency. The General Assembly created the North Carolina Capital Facility Finance Agency in the 1980s to extend the benefits of tax-exempt financing to nonprofit private colleges in North Carolina. Meredith has certain covenants associated with these bonds. This includes the requirements to maintain a debt service coverage ratio of at least 1, which is just enough operating income to fully cover annual debt payments. However, the college fell short of that threshold with a debt service coverage ratio of 0.65 as of June 30, 2024. This did not automatically trigger a default, but it could if the situation is not addressed. The school planned to reach a debt service coverage ratio of at least 1.2 at the end of fiscal year 2025, according to the S&P Global Ratings report in February. Allen confirmed that the school is still targeting that 1.2 ratio. If a default were to occur, bondholders would accelerate repayment, which could strain the college's resources. Meredith had about $12.7 million in cash and cash equivalents and $19.52 million in board-designated quasi-endowment funds at the end of fiscal year 2024, according to the school's latest annual financial statement. The college also has about $15 million in temporarily restricted endowment net assets that it could access, according to the S&P Global Ratings report. The negative outlook reflects our view of the college's fiscal 2024 missed debt covenant, which, if continued, could constitute an event of default. It also reflects our view of the college's pressured liquidity position in the event the bonds are accelerated, Stavropoulos said. And that just about wraps us up for today's program. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. We have run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed listening. Again, I'm Hugh Bennett, reading for North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, call 919-832-5138.